the more that your team actually reflects the audiences of people that are going to be playing these games, like the more chance of being successful you're going to have, right? To me, this is like the future of the industry. So having this combination of like diversity across a lot of different facets of the fund.
Hi, I am Sophie Vu, and this is the Rise and Play podcast. In the show, I sit down with influential thought leaders in the gaming industry to deconstruct how they create the best teams and company cultures in order to create the best games. Speaking to hundreds of game executives in the show, I have identified recurring patterns and mistakes that we all make in our leadership journey. Do you have to go through the same hurdles and make the same mistakes to learn too? You are not alone in this journey, and hopefully you can learn from a diverse range of seasoned leaders who already walked the talk. Every episode brings actionable insights and case studies that will help you improve your management skills, self-awareness, and empathic communication. Becoming a better leader starts with becoming a better human. Are you ready to unlock your full potential in life and business? Let's begin. Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of Rise and Play, and today I am sitting with Kelly Wallach representing One Up Fund. I was really excited to also talk to you today to understand more what the fund is about, what you're building, and around the idea of the whole community of studios, developers, founders, which we'll touch on today. But before we start, also let me introduce you to our guest. So Kelly before has worked in the tech and video game industry for over 10 years, and she's the founder of the Indie Megabooth, former chair of the Independent Games Festival, and a partner and community builder, like now today, at the One Up Fund. And on top of that, you're a passionate believer in the strength and impact of community, which I believe was one of the reasons you connected with One Up, and implementing long-term change to support creative, unique, and diverse voices. So welcome, Kelly.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. I've been looking forward to this.
So as we begin, and also even before we get into the One Up fund and venture, quick question about how was your career, whether it was in games, as I give an intro, but more maybe you had also an history before you got into games, and one thing to another, what led you to maybe your first work into the Indie Megabooth, maybe there's some commonality by that time, and to later building communities with One Up Fund. If you could give us a bit also of your journey.
Yeah, of course. So I actually didn't start off in the games industry. I always had an interest in games and computers, and actually I'd done a handful of programming. But I went to school for chemistry. So I started off as a chemist. I did my undergraduate degree at Penn State. And then I started off working at mostly startups. Like, I think I've always kind of stuck in that genre. I'd always kind of like dreamed of starting up a company, and you know, I just wasn't really sure what that was going to look like. And around that same time, I was starting to attend local game meetups in the Boston area. There's a really big independent game scene in Boston and in Cambridge, and yeah, so I was really interested in that as like a career switch. And so I got a job at a contract company that did like enterprise software and websites and some game things. And around that same time, I was volunteering at some local studios and just getting more involved in the independent scene and starting to attend conferences like PAX, which is the Penny Arcade Expo, which is like a large consumer facing event for video games. And it was hard to get noticed. You know, there's like these big AAA booths where people had like millions of dollars and they're building like dragons and they have cosplayers. And, you know, it's like, it's very elaborate. You have a lot of staff working at it. And so one of the studios that I was helping with, they like had proposed the idea. They're like, oh, you know, we should get a whole bunch of the teams together, like all the studios that we know in Boston, the next time the PAX comes through, and we should like buy a big space together and then like make, you know, big signs and do this thing. And then that way, like nobody will miss us. And so I offered to like logistically like run the whole thing. And then that was basically the first time that the mega booth happened. It was interesting. So the first time we ran it, we had 16 companies, and I just thought we'd never do it again. I just thought it was like this fun, like one-off thing. And then people were like, oh, are we going to do it next year? Like, you know, can I invite my friend? And I was like, okay, yeah, I guess we'll do it another time. And then it just like kept like growing and growing. And at some point I was like, okay, I think I have to quit my job if I'm going to like keep doing this. And so, you know, and this is this opportunity for me to like, you know, start a business and to run a company. And so I quit my full-time job and then started running the Mega Booth as a full-time thing. Ran that for about a decade up until the pandemic.
Wow.
Yeah. And we worked with like over 800 studios during the time that it was running. We did showcases all over the world. We gave out like hundreds of thousands of dollars in grant and scholarship programs and built this whole community around it. And it really kind of turned into something like much bigger than myself. And we had always kind of had a bend toward, I want to say, like, I guess, like including more diverse voices. That wasn't totally an ethos at the start. It was just what I was interested in. And I'm, you know, people would be like, oh, there's not really many women who make games. And I was like, oh, really? I was like, we should have more women show video games. Or like, there's not a lot of queer representation. I was like, okay, we should have some more queer representation. But then later on, I think that became more of like a kind of something that was much more intentional. And so a lot of the like grant and scholarship programs were around like trying to support diverse founders and bring more people into the space and have them be able to like make those connections and showcase their games and show audiences that, you know, these kinds of things were available to them. And then along the way, I also got asked to take over the position of the chairperson for the Independent Games Festival, which is an award ceremony for indie developers that they hold at GDC each year. That's been running, I think, now for like 25 or 26 years. but I ran it for 7 years, which I think is actually the longest tenure. Mm-hmm. And also, I was the first woman to run it. And then about 5 years or so ago, I got connected up with Ed Fries. And we'll talk more about the fun stuff, so I won't go into that too much now. But we got connected up around the concept and the idea of the One Up Fund. And so I started doing that, mostly kind of like as just doing the community building and the community side of it. And then about 2 years or so ago, I joined as a full-time partner in the fund. As I mentioned, during the pandemic, I closed down the Mega Booth, and so it had gone into hibernation. So I had this opportunity to think about, like, you know, what does this next like phase of my career look like? And, you know, what do I want to be focusing on? And like, what does this next step for me look like? And that's been the One Up Fund.
Mm-hmm. What was the process for you closing or, you know, phasing out a big part of your life in the company to join a fund? And what are the learnings that you took with you and that you said, like, you became more maybe intentional about what you wanted to bring with the fund?
Yeah, I mean, that was very, very difficult. It is incredibly painful, and especially something that I was doing for 10 years. You know, this was like a huge part of my identity. It was my whole life was really wrapped up in it. And then especially to have to close it during the pandemic, which felt like something that was literally outside of my control. You know, it didn't have anything to do with us or how I was running the company or, you know, anything that we had done. And it was totally unexpected. So it just felt like, you know, I kind of got like sideswiped with this thing. And so, you know, the grieving process of that was very long. And then also the level of burnout that I was at that point was pretty high. Like, I had started working when I was a teenager. I didn't grow up with a lot of money and resources. And so I started working when I was pretty young, and had never really stopped other than for like kind of physical injury or mental health problems, I guess, you know? And so it was like, it wasn't just the kind of like 10 years of the company, you know, it was a much longer kind of like broader thing. And a lot of stuff had changed in my life, over the time, over that 10 years. And so, you know, when this was happening, it was kind of like, it was really painful and difficult, but it was also kind of the first time that I had had an opportunity in my life to like kind of be still and like be intentional and think about what I was doing next. And during that time, I was still working for the One Up Fund. I was still working for the IGF, but that was like very, at that point, it had been sort of a minimal commitments or just kind of smaller commitments because I had been doing this other thing, you know, that was taking a huge chunk of time. So it took about, I'd say probably like a year and a half until I was really kind of fully unwound from the whole thing. And like during that time, I was doing a lot of therapy, a lot of self-work. I had already been starting that work prior, but, you know, I was really like delving deep into it. Having more friendships outside of my work, you know, like cultivating community in the places that I lived instead of kind of the places that I was working. And then during that process, I was thinking like, you know, I've been working with the One Up Fund, but I went into it not knowing much about how venture funds work and how they function. And so it wasn't clear to me, like, I'm like, oh, it's, you know, does the fund keep going or like what happens with it or are we growing or how does that happen? And so, you know, Ed and I started talking about it And think at that point, we were getting ready to kind of round out the final investments in the first fund and looking towards like getting started on the second fund. And so this was really an opportunity for me to like step up and take like a bigger role in the fund, you know, as we were going to be expanding and doing all these new things. And, you know, there's a bunch of things that I really like about it. But, you know, I think one of the things that felt really important to me is like, I like to make a high impact. And I think that, you know, we're in a capitalist world, right? And like money is resources and money is power and money is impact. And there's not a ton of people that are like me that have, you know, decision-making power to like give people money essentially. And so, you know, I was like, this is an opportunity that I could have like a really big impact on like the types of companies that are getting funded, the types of, you know, like ways that we're moving forward in the industry and what that looks like. You know, like there is substantial amounts of money that we're able to give to people. Like, you know, there's more infrastructure around this. And also like, you know, working with Ed on it, like I've really loved working with him. His experience is super cool. And just like the whole way that we structure the fund and like how we work together and all of that was something that I felt really good about. And, you know, thinking about our fund is supported for 10 years for each fund. So this is something that's like, I could be doing through the rest of my career. Right. Mm. And so it just seemed like a really cool, yeah, like kind of a cool opportunity that was like, you know, there was kind of flow into it and something that made sense for me and felt right. And so I was like, okay, you know, that's what I'm going to step into. And that's what I'm going to try next. And so it's a bit of a sort of third career switch, I guess, mm-hmm. for me. At least it's like in the same kind of industry.
Yeah. But that's, yeah. I can clearly see also the path and the journey and the growth for you with what drives you, but also the impact, right? Because it's true. We talk about diversity among the companies, but there should be the same lens in the diversity of who have a conversation and decisions on right. how the money is distributed as much important, right? Because the same bias exists and you build just more better decision-making and objectivity, different perspective when you have that same level of diversity. And before we get more into the fund itself and what you're doing a bit differently from others, which is also a great opportunity for, as we have many founders who are listening also to the podcast, what was the process as well for you to connect with Ed, who's the general partner, as I understand, maybe a bit of background, yeah. and how did you groom the partnership over time, right? Did you yeah. work before? How did you know each other? Basically, how did you get in the venture world?
Yeah.
through the opportunity, but maybe also there's a part of network that we don't know about yeah. In the story.
Yeah, so I didn't know who Ed was. I mean, now I'm like, oh, maybe I should have known who he was. But, you know, I was so far on the indie side that anything that had to do with AAA stuff, you know, I kind of paid attention to it a little bit. But, you know, it wasn't really like the area of the industry that I was working in. So it wasn't something that I was super familiar with. So I didn't know him. We hadn't met before. And he was kind of talking to, I think, some friends in the industry and folks about this venture fund that he was going to be starting and having this focus on community and really wanted to build that with the founders. And as he was talking about it, someone was like, you have to talk to Kelly Wallach. So they're like, she knows how to do this stuff. Like, it's exactly what you're looking for. Like, you guys should talk. I had a really great, honest conversation about like this vision that he wanted to build. And, you know, when I talk about having this focus on diversity in the fund, this isn't like something that like I brought specifically to the idea of the fund. Like this is something that Ed holds as like a value of his that he cares a lot about. And so like we were very aligned on like the ideas that we wanted to like impart into the industry and what we thought was important and like what we loved about the community side of things and how we felt about founders. And, you know, and one of the things for me too is he's like a venture fund has these things called a management fee, which means that I would have like a budget to be able to like run these things for the community. I thought it was a cool idea. He seemed really great. You know, people that I talked to about him all had nice things to say about him. And so I was like, okay, you know, like I'll do this. Basically, like I mentioned, it was kind of like a part-time thing. You know, we worked together, it was a couple years, I guess, you know, before I joined as a full-time partner. And during that time, like I got a chance to kind of like absorb and learn more about the VC space. And Ed, I think one of the things that I really love about working with him is that he's a very good teacher, I guess is like a way to put it, like a mentor and a teacher, which is interesting because I had been running my own stuff for so long and I've been in so many startups. I've had a lot of like friends and kind of people advising me, but I've never really like had somebody mentoring me before. And so it's actually been really great and helpful. And I think he does a really great job of it. But he's really good at taking things that are kind of big and complicated and distilling them down to very simple like concepts and principles. And so, you know, I got to really like learn like kind of with him, because at the same time, like he had been on boards and advisory and, you know, like involved in a lot of like game companies, but hadn't run a venture fund before either. So, you know, there's like, as he was learning things, he would teach that to me. And so by the time that I kind of moved into taking on a role as a partner, I'd kind of already gotten a lot of foundational information about how VC fund works and had also been witnessing it, you know, kind of firsthand. But I think one of the things that's also nice is that I think both of us came into it without a lot of ideas about what it needed to be. So we could kind of shape it and build it like the way that we really wanted to. Like I mentioned, you know, over time, my thoughts and feelings around like the impact of funding and like you had mentioned, you know, who's making the decisions about the funding, and like the same way as like who's making the decisions about what games get featured and who's making the decisions about this stuff. It's like you can have a giant amount of diversity at the bottom of the funnel, I guess, or whichever metaphor you want to use for it. But if that's all getting pitched to kind of like a homogenous group of people, like it can really bottleneck, you know, the kind of like the depth and the breadth of projects and stuff that end up getting funded or featured, you know, kind of by these like, you know, biases that people may or may not realize that they have, or ideas they have about what can be successful and what can't be successful and what audiences will play what things and all of that. And so it became clear to me that this was like something that was like kind of a unique opportunity that I was able to have access to that other people couldn't. And like I said, I really enjoyed my work with Ed, and like I really loved the community. Like by that point, you know, I'm like, I'm all in on like everybody's journeys, right? Like I've been following them for a few years already and was like excited to start up a new one.
Okay, so let's get into the fund as well, where you're at today. So as I know, so you are working on your second fund. I wanted to hear more about first, and how many companies do you have in the portfolio? What is the profile as well? So more in like high level view before we get in maybe in some details, the whole thesis of the fund. And yeah, for anyone listening, who should talk to you? If they can recognize themselves in what you're looking for as well in your companies.
Yeah, so the way that our funding works is that we don't act as a lead investor. We have a standard check size of 500K. We only invest in video game studios making video game content, so not like platforms or technologies or anything like that. And then we really just focus on the community side of it. And so when I say, you know, that we're not a lead investor, oh, and we also mostly invest in just like seed stage, so like whatever, like a first priced round for teams. And so what's interesting about this is that because we're not a lead investor, like we don't need to have a staff size that requires doing like the volume of due diligence, being on board seats, you know, all the things that need to go into being a lead investor, which means that we can focus on like the way that we contribute is through the community side. We have a standard number of investments, so we make 50 investments per a fund. And that's the community size. And that's something that Ed felt very strongly about, is like this kind of magic number of like, it's big enough that there's a lot of expertise, but it's not so big that people get shy about like asking questions or building relationships with people. And, you know, when we say that we invest in game studios making content, you know, one of the reasons for that is that that's the area that Ed and I know the most. I mean, when I said I worked with 800 studios, that also means that I was reviewing like, I don't know, 600-700 games a year for like 10 years. You know, like I was looking at a lot of stuff. And, you know, Ed with his work at Microsoft and building up the games department there, and like he headed up their publishing efforts for a long time. You know, he's seen hundreds and thousands of pitches as well. And so this is just like an area that we know super well and we're familiar with. But the other component of that is then when people are in the community, they're like their peers are all solving similar problems, right? Like they are all making games, they're all building game studios. And so like when they talk to each other, they have a lot of commonality, even though it's across like genres and platforms and, you know, various countries and global initiatives. And so, you know, that lets the community also kind of be a little like, I don't know, like self-serving in a way, because people can like help each other out. And so, you know, the fund is structured in like this very specific way, and that lets us keep our team small. Like, it's just me and Ed, and then we have a part-time fund administrator named Chris who does all the kind of like legal and accounting stuff, and then that's it. And so, you know, Ed and I are the ones that are making all the decisions. You know, I'm the one who's primarily running the community side of things, and you know, and then that's like we're able to be very like clear about what our focus is and what our thesis is. And then, you know, if you kind of step down another layer from that, as I mentioned, like we do really love to invest in diverse founders. But we also have like diversity and I'd say a lot of different ways. So like I had mentioned, even though we're only investing in game studios, we're genre agnostic, we're platform agnostic. We're agnostic as, you know, where they're located in the world outside of like a handful of countries. And so it's like we have the diversity of that. We have diversity of size of studios and scope and scale. So we have teams that are like, I never want to be bigger than 20 people. And then we have teams that are like, we have hundreds, we want to have hundreds of people, and we're making a big giant AAA game. And, you know, and then to go back to the diversity of the founders, that's something that like, you know, we like morally and ethically think is important, but also like the audience of people who play video games are super diverse, right? And so like for us, it's like, okay, the more that your team actually reflects the audiences of people that are going to be playing these games, like the more chance of being successful you're going to have, mm-hmm. right? And this is just like, to me, this is like the future of the industry. So, you know, it's kind of like having this combination of like diversity across a lot of different facets of the fund. But, you know, within side of that, there's a structure that is very clear that it's like, we only invest this amount of money. We only come on as a follow-on. It's only for video game studios. We don't take a board seat. And that lets us just kind of focus on like the core part that we find, you know, to be the most important. And so that was the structure for fund one. And then, like I mentioned, we had fully invested, I think like last summer. So we're just about in the start of the second year of the second fund. and so we're on track on our investing plan. We've done almost 20 deals, I think, out of the second fund. So we have about 70 studios across both portfolios. That we've invested in. And, you know, aside from like a couple small tweaks, we're pretty much sticking to a similar format that we had for the first fund.
Let's take a moment maybe on the community part, because as you have a certain volume of studio exactly with diversity, different maybe challenges, platforms, what is your focus in the community part? Is it about building synergy between the studio or a sense of belonging, maybe an environment of safety where they can actually talk to each other more privately? Basically, yeah. What have you identified as maybe gaps that other funds are not investing in so much? And it's not here to say that they are not doing the right thing, but more every fund has their own style yeah. and focus, right? But here, you're the one that comes to mind when it's about building a community, and what are the gaps that you have seen in the space and that you wanted to address, especially with 1UP?
Yeah. So, you know, I think it's kind of actually like, I'd say a combination of a lot of those things, you know, like we really want, and the teams to be able to build like trust with each other. Right. And we want them to be able to feel that they can lean on each other and that they can be honest about where they're at or feel comfortable sharing things about like, you know, like we've had people be like, oh, like, does someone have an example of their pitch deck? And, you know, people feel comfortable sharing what their pitch decks look like. So it's like, can kind of help to like raise it's like, you know, the floating tide or the rising tide floats all boats kind of feeling. And so, you know, there's a lot of ways that we focus on doing that. And that even starts with the types of companies that we want to invest in and the teams. And, you know, just as much as like the studio and the project is interesting to us, like also like, are they going to be a good fit in the community? Like, what are their kind of ethos around, you know, collaboration and sharing and building community? You know, what are their thoughts on diversity with inside of their studio and just, you know, generally, and like kind of what are their goals like culturally for their company? And like all that stuff is really important to us because like we want to be kind of fostering what we see as like, you know, a positive way forward for the games industry. So, a lot of the teams have like really fascinating stuff about like how they do their management structure or open salaries or, mm-hmm. you know, like new kind of ideas and structures on the way that they're thinking about their company and like really focusing on culture and all that stuff we think is really important. And so it's because you have people who have all these kind of like creative and interesting ideas about like the meta of building games and building studios, you know, that helps to like get people excited about how other people are working and to like learn from them and share ideas. And I've talked about this a lot too. I think with community building and just with like trust and building emotional intimacy and all this stuff in general, like you can't force it. I think you can build a community very quickly and big and like have these impressive numbers, but I don't know if that's actually like healthy in the long term and like at what things are you trading off at the beginning. And I think the foundational stuff is the super important part, because that, as you scale, starts to really influence like the type of culture that your community has. So like the ways that people are modeling their behavior when new people come in is like what's going to get modeled, right? So like if we have people at the start who are really open about sharing what their experiences are, or like giving advice, or, you know, being willing to pitch into the community side of it, then new people come in and they see that being modeled. And I think that if you try to force those things to happen, or you try to scale too quickly or anything, then it's like, it's kind of chaotic and it just basically gets dictated by whoever's the loudest, which is not necessarily like what you want for your community, right? So I think like the kind of container and the intentionality is like very, very like tight for me at the beginning. And then after that, it's like, it's kind of becomes a little more self-directed, and I'm just kind of like, I'm always lurking. I'm always reading. I'm always seeing what people are, you know, and taking notes about what people are talking about, to be able to like, you know, implement new programs or do things that the community is interested in. And so like, I kind of talk about that. It's just kind of, it's like being slow and consistent essentially. And like, you have to care about it a lot. And I think that like is easier said than done, right? Cause it doesn't sound interesting. It's not exciting. Like when you talk to people about it, it's not like, oh, there's a growth hack, or I do this or I do this. It's like, it's really just like, it takes, you know, it takes time to build relationships, and it takes time to build trust. And like, you know, and I've had more experience with that over the community side. I've had a lot of experience in like, honestly, in like group therapy settings. And so like being able to kind of like moderate and hold space for people to like talk about things that can be complicated or difficult, or make it feel comfortable for them to share, to understand what that container needs to look like. You know, I think that all that contributes to it, but like really, like you just have to be very patient and like, I think get the right people in there, like kind of put in the right infrastructure for it, and then just like be willing to be patient, and just let it happen. Because like, I just really think that you can't just cram a bunch of people together and be like, here, be best friends, you know, like it doesn't really work that way.
Yeah. What are the practices that you've seen have worked really well on the community side that maybe to share examples that could inspire, I don't know, other funds or other community trying to achieve an outcome together? And the other side of the question is, what are the challenges as well of trying to build a community? Because I believe it's, again, there are diverse numbers, but also maybe some of them, although you try to curate through the culture, may still don't want to share with others because they are still strangers, maybe they are competitors. So if you could share also more openly like the applications of that community building.
Yeah.
What works and what is still a challenge?
So we have Slack channels where people can just like talk and communicate with each other asynchronously, you know, like whenever they feel like it. The original intent was that we were going to do like in-person meetups like pretty regularly around conferences, but the pandemic happened like a year or two into the investing of the fund, the first fund. And so as kind of a necessity, or, you know, like everybody was kind of panicking, like, I have to close my offices. Like, I don't know what's going on, you know, it's like very scary. So we're like, okay, let's get everybody on a Zoom call, and everybody can talk about how they're handling it, like real time, like with inside of their companies. And then I had started just kind of, I was like, okay, well, let's run these like weekly or bi-weekly, like at the time, because it was just, there was a lot going on, as a way for people to like keep supporting each other through this whole process. And then that kind of turned into like every like 2 or 3 weeks ish now for like a couple years, we've been running virtual meetup times for folks, and they're pretty open-ended. Like we have open Q&A format, essentially, like we'll all kind of catch up a little bit, and then people can say like, oh, you know, like I'm trying to hire for this role and I'm having trouble, or like, you know, I have a question about this technical thing, or like, I'm curious, you know, how people handle health insurance in Canada. and so it's like, you know, people like will pose questions and then like ask it to the community. And this is one of the things that I was saying about consistency, because like over time, you know, people like get more comfortable, like maybe the questions that get asked early on in a community are a little like more surface level, like, oh, like, where do I buy this kind of asset? Or like, how do you determine what kind of engine? And then, you know, as people get to know each other over the years and get more comfortable, then it might be like, oh, I'm having trouble with my co-founder, and like, I really don't know how to handle it. Or like, I have an employee that I'm really like struggling with, and how do you do, performance improvement programs? And so it's like, it kind of gets a little like deeper and deeper. So those became very important, and we still do like meetups at events, like physical in-person meetups now that the pandemic is winding down. We also do an annual retreat where we get everybody together and we basically do an in-person, more formalized version of like what those meetups are, mm-hmm. Which I have a whole kind of philosophy on how to run those also. I think having this combination of being able to get people together in person and then also having the virtual component of it, I think works really well to help to like build and maintain mm-hmm. the relationships, but also like build and maintain the trust over time. And then in addition to that, which these are kind of, similar, but like ancillary to the community stuff, is that we also run series of workshops. So we'll have like kind of industry experts come in and give talks. We have programs that we run around diversity, equity, and inclusion and mental health and wellness in the game space, focusing on founders, that we provide consulting hours to the teams. And then we also buy like industry data, and we have like purchasing programs and discounts and, just kind of as many connections as we can try to make for the teams to be able to kind of like technically help them run their companies and their studios. And so I think, there's kind of like light optional touch points mm-hmm. happening at least once or twice a month, I'd say. And so seeing it out of the second fund is like really interesting, because it's like, getting to start out again from the foundation. And this time the teams had the in-person meetups with each other, like when the group is still small. So like when we did our in-person retreat this year, it was like 10 people or something, which the first time that we ever held the retreat for the first fund, it was already 50 people. So yeah. It was like, and they'd already like had all these years of like talking to each other virtually, but like we did a dinner at GDC and like people literally never seen each other in person before, but have been talking for like years at this point. So it's kind of interesting to see like how the kind of community is like growing and building that trust and stuff with the second community starting off smaller, and having to have the in-person stuff. And I was really impressed and really happy with kind of like the openness and like how willing people were to share. Because I think that's also modeled now by the first fund and the first community. Mm-hmm. And like a lot of the people that we're investing in have friends who were, have studios that we invested in the first fund, or they know someone who recommended them to talk to us about it. And so it's like, they're kind of coming in with like, again, this is like a secondary model of, the foundation of the community itself, but then it's the foundation of kind of like, what do people think of the community? And it was interesting because that kind of happened with the mega booth and like curation stuff. At some point I was like listening on a call, and everybody's like, oh, this sounds like a mega booth game, and this doesn't sound like a mega booth game. But like, mm-hmm. and I was like, oh, like I used to be the only person who could curate this, or like knew what the curation vision was. But now it's happened so much publicly that like people can come in externally and like identify mm-hmm. like what I was looking for, like with inside of this. And so I think it's kind of a similar thing, is that people are like, oh, like I know that company, or like how you're saying, like, oh, I know all these people. And like, you can kind of like, you have a subconscious idea of like, what is the thread of what this is. So like when you come into it, it's like already modeled and it's already ready, and you're already kind of primed to be like, oh, this is like an accepting place. Like this is focused on community. This has this kind of people in it that I feel comfortable with, So it's like, it's kind of interesting to see it build on itself for the second community.
Yeah. I do also know from my network, the word of mouth, that you've been known also for the great portfolio of companies and community.
Yeah.
That is built around, and it's like being part of a group, right? So that's how you will build also your word of mouth, the marketing of the fund in the way, just through the people and the community.
Right. Like we don't do a ton of like external marketing, like we don't really like push what we're doing. And I think that the kind of word of mouth and recommendations from other studios to me is like the best kind of marketing that you can get. Right. But that marketing comes from like, from doing, you know, and that's another thing that just takes time, again, which is kind of like, doesn't sound super interesting, but just take time and consistency and to like be aligning with your values regularly so that people see that and then talk about it. And to me, it's like, that's the best kind of marketing, in my opinion.
And that I can see in the progress of the fund since, I don't know, a year ago when I even looked at the portfolio, and now knowing some of the companies that are part of it. So again, you're doing something good here for with a fund. And one last question that I wanted to touch on: how much are you looking into I have a level of ambition of companies, what they're going, do they want to be big, yeah. and so on. Is this a lens you have as well in the return, or this is not what the fund is about? If you could give more insights as well about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little bit of both. And I think that because the games industry, I mean, one, it's very hit driven. And hits can come from all kinds of sizes and shapes of studios and companies. And so, you know, I think that it's one thing to talk about like what the ambitions are of the company. And like we get to kind of benefit from having this kind of different model and not needing to be a lead investor or not being a lead investor, which I think kind of lends itself to a different kind of decision making. Because like, if you think about it, so say like you're a lead investor, you're going to take board seats, you're going to do all this stuff, like you maybe make, you know, a handful of investments per year, right? So like your hit rate on those has to be pretty high. Where because we're spreading that risk out across a large number, we're kind of looking a little more like how a publisher would approach things mm-hmm. or how a large publisher would approach something, where you have a lot of stuff kind of out in the market or like out there, you know. So then like when something hits, like you're there and you're available for it. And so I think that we kind of like approach it much more on like a holistic mm-hmm. idea than it is kind of on like the ambitions of like individual studios. And so like that's one of the reasons that we have some that it's like we have, you know, a percentage of people who like really want to do big giant AAA things. Like I said, you know, some people that really only want to be 20 people, but like super giant is like 20 people and mm-hmm. you know, they're super successful and are clearly making, you know, they're doing well for themselves, right? So it's not like any one of those models doesn't lend itself to being, you know, successful in the long term. From my experience of what I've seen of the teams that become successful or make successful products or, you know, successful studios, is I think it really has a lot to do with the attitude of the founder, like how, like the culture of what they're trying to build, like the sustainability of how they're doing their work, like what is their reputation going to be, like can they make decisions as they're going along, like are people going to be able to like weather all of these changes, and are they going to be able to make the decisions that they need to make, and like are people going to rally behind them and get behind mm-hmm. the project, and you know, all this stuff. So I think it's a lot of different factors aside from just like, I mean, it's easy to say we're going to make 100x company or something, but it's like way harder to like yeah. actually do it, right? And the path to that is like is much harder, or you know, a little more convoluted and a little more complicated than I think it seems on the surface. So it's very much an art and a science, you know. And it's a little, when I was doing curation stuff primarily, I had a friend of mine who's like, she's like, I hate to say it, but sometimes like you know it when you see it, and like, it's hard. Like you kind of have to build up this gut over time to like be able to assess and look at projects and be like, oh, I think this has potential or this doesn't. But that's hard to do when you're like really, really only looking for like specific kinds of return, right? Because there's really no like, I push this button, this button, this button, this button, I get big giant hit. You know, like in the games industry, it's like you can kind of finagle it a little bit, but it doesn't really quite work that way, because it's an entertainment product, right? Mm-hmm. And it's art and it's like creative. And like, that's hard to like, to suss out, you know, like what's going to be big, mm-hmm. right? So our philosophy, I think, on it is a lot more kind of a holistic approach, and mm-hmm. like helping to support the teams like through that process, so that like our hope is that over time, those teams are more successful on the whole, because they've had access to like, you know, this knowledge share and mm-hmm. like the support of their peers and like, this, you know, extra information to like kind of give them, that's the one up, you know, to mm-hmm. give them a little bit of a one up on a, on other teams. So that's kind of our approach to it, you know. And in the process, like I said, I think that this is going to be successful and like do well, you know, and that the fund will make money and it will do the returns. But it's kind of like coming at it from a lot of different angles instead of just like purely a numbers game.
Yeah. There's some commonalities or factors that increase the odds of success, and you're looking at it as well, but much more from like the team, the founders, the culture, right. the ways of working, and here also creating a multiplier effect with the ecosystem you're building, which is a compound effect over time, because it has value over time. So it's an investment over time once again, and not just the one shot.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Kelly, for the time today, and I felt really energized and excited about what you shared, and knowing some of the studios there, so I'm happy they're in good hands with you. And I'm sure we'll hear a bit even more about you and from you next year with a second fund and even more projects that you'll run, and hopefully best practices for the industry.
Yeah, this has been really great. I mean, clearly I love talking about this stuff, and I always love having a chance to kind of geek out on the minutiae of like the community side and, you know, our philosophy on things. So I appreciate it. I know you mentioned this before about like, you know, if people feel like they want to get in touch with us. So we have an About Us like contact form on our website. So if you go to oneupfund.com, you can go there and we have information about like kind of technically what we're looking for. And then there's a form that you can fill out to submit your materials. And we review it generally once a week, unless like we're off for something or traveling. So like I look at all of them and then Ed and I review them. And then we'll reach out if we want to schedule a meeting. So that's the best way to send us materials. I'm not really on LinkedIn all that much, but I know Ed is. And so that's another great way to get in touch. Yeah, but we're always happy to look at projects and hear from people. And we talk to folks pretty early as well too, like, and try to help give advice and be available for that. So that we always encourage people to, you know, reach out if they want to learn more.
Yeah. So I encourage everyone who resonates to what we've talked about today and what Kelly shared, reach out and apply. Thanks a lot, Kelly. Have a great end of day and you take care.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this latest episode of the Rise and Play podcast. I am growing a community of conscious leaders across the industry and beyond. If you want to join this movement, please share the podcast with other conscious leaders because we have so much more we can learn from each other. If you've enjoyed this episode, please follow and rate the show on Spotify or your other favorite podcast platform. It will help other growing leaders to discover the show and benefit from the valuable insights. If you would like to grow rapidly your leadership skills, you can find more insights on riseandplay.io, where you will also find my free masterclass on conscious leadership and other resources that I offer. Have a great week, and remember to take care of yourself. Until the next time.